Good morning. My name is Ed Hollihan, and this is The View From Here. Our daughter took the train to Chicago last week, Amtrak. It's the last leg of the Empire Builder's marvelous run out of Seattle. La Crosse to Chicago in about 5 hours. Easy peasy. Except that this is 21st century America, and rail transportation, something that's relied on in most of the world, finishes a distant third to automobile and air travel. Departures and arrivals are only suggested times. The train will get there when it can, if it can. Her train was 6 hours late. 6 hours. Now here's the irony. In the 18th century, the time of day was a fairly fluid thing. Noon in Gary was not necessarily noon in Omaha. Timekeeping was entirely local, and it depended on who was keeping it. Who wound the clocks and who rang the church bells? So up until 1883, there were 144 different time zones in North America. Local time meant local time. Travel was painstakingly slow, especially long-distance travel. If you were on horseback or in an ox wagon or on foot, any trip of 10 miles or more was not trivial. If you took the journey between Pittsburgh and St. Louis, saying you would arrive at 10:35 on a Tuesday morning would have been absurd. Your estimated travel time would have been calculated in weeks and days, not hours and minutes. But the railroads changed all that. The bigger the network became, the more precisely scheduled it became. The 10:35 from Chicago to New York meant the 10:35, not 11:50 and not maybe tomorrow. In a relatively short time, the United States was on railroad time. When the current time zones were established, that was in 1883, everyone knew that noon in New Jersey was exactly 11 a.m. in Peoria and precisely 9 a.m. in Sacramento. Now, the clock setters and the bell ringers all had to be showing the same minute or they were out of a job. Rail travel was an enormously influential development, one of the most important technological innovations of the 19th century. Humans had invented a very efficient way to move lots of people to lots of different destinations. In the rest of the civilized world, transportation by rail is still a very efficient, timely way to travel. But Suzanne's train was 6 hours late. 6 hours. Why? Automobiles, manufacturing, and egos. The automobile put you in charge of your schedule. Your personal vehicle was all you needed to get from here to there. It didn't matter when other people wanted to leave. It didn't matter where anyone else was going. Starting with the first assembly line motor cars, Americans were on their own. Travel was individualized, and we loved it. Manufacturing in huge facilities required the delivery of massive amounts of raw materials from source A to destination B in ever shorter times. String together 100 tank cars, fill them with bauxite, get them to an Alcoa plant, and start making aluminum. Repeat this process in every major industry. The profits were incredible. The railroad barons made their fortunes on freight, not from passengers. Nothing has changed. The system is more freight-friendly than ever. The freight lines own the railroad rights of way. If a passenger train is using the same line that a freight train needs, the freight train gets priority every time. Every time. Ladies and gentlemen, we're in a hold on this siding while a Burlington Northern train passes. We'll let you know what our new arrival time will be just as soon as we know. Of course, the United States could change this if we wanted to. There are all kinds of modifications to the system that could be made, but that would take political will, and political will takes popular outcry. Somehow, I just can't imagine Americans saying, "Take my truck, please, please let me take the train." Or, "If you provide a train that works, I'll leave the Jeep at home. I'd rather ride with strangers anyway." It's not going to happen anytime soon. So her train was 6 hours late leaving here and 6 hours, 10 minutes late arriving there. I guess it's true that you get what you pay for and never what you don't pay for.